you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Radio. I'm your host tonight, Rob Hathaway, sitting in for Dave Vance, who has the night off. My thanks to Dave for letting me sit in and try to fill his shoes. Dave, I'll do the best I can to uphold that high standard you've already set. And I hope you're having fun wherever you are tonight. Our guests on Inside Tennessee for this Monday, September 9th, include Kathy Hinners from her blog is dailyroll.com, and we'll be talking about the upcoming September 11th events to commemorate that memorable and infamous day when we all know what occurred. And she'll give us an update on any events that are online and scheduled to bring that information back to the front of our minds. We'll also talk to Chris Holton from the Center of Security Policy. Yeah, he'll talk to us about Syria-compliant finance, that system of financing that is used in the Muslim world. And then we'll speak to Lori Cardozo Moore. She is the founder and president of Proclaiming Justice to the Nations. She'll be on as our last guest, and we're going to talk about some of the Common Core educational issues with textbook bias and other information we'll find relevant, and ways we can get involved and help bring and restore education back to the counties and to the parents primarily and the students. So we're on for a good show, a lively show, I think. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council. You can visit their website at www.tn4action.com. TNforAction.com. The Tennessee Action Council is an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit their website again at TennesseeForAction.com. And speaking of Judeo-Christian values, let me ask you, our listeners, a question. What specifically are they? When you hear the term Judeo-Christian values or Judeo-Christian foundations, what does that mean? What comes to your mind? Perhaps the Bible. But what in there are those principles that our country's founded on? And how many of them are there that are relevant to our founding? For the first few minutes, we're going to talk about one of them and possibly get to another one if time permits. And if I am ever invited back to host this show once again, we'll eventually talk about all of them. The first one, which we'll get to in a moment, is probably no surprise. That's also mentioned in the Declaration of Independence. And that, of course, was written by our founding fathers. And when our nation's founding fathers gave us documents such as the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and others, ending of law, government, social order, and morality. That understanding sprang from the common acceptance of what has come to be known as the Judeo-Christian ethic, which is the system of the moral and social values that originates in the Old and New Testaments of the Word of God. Whether each of the founding fathers was a Christian is not the issue. Their writings, their statements, and their votes evidence the fact that the majority of them embraced these great principles as the basis for a civilized, keyword, civilized nation. The first principle I want to talk to you about is the first one that was named in the Declaration of Independence, wherein they said, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. That among these are life. No surprise there that it's the first one. And that's the first principle I want to talk about. You know, the scriptures emphatically teach the great importance of the respect and preservation of human life. In the Declaration of Independence, as I mentioned earlier, our nation's founding fathers wrote that everyone has unalienable rights. That means they cannot be taken away. And that among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We Americans not only believe this for our land, but also we send our brave military men and women around the world to defend the rights of those who are threatened. If people and nations do not grant ultimate respect and protection to both the born and the unborn, all other professed morals and values are meaningless. Or as I once was told by a wise man, without the right to life, none of the other rights really matter. So the dignity of human life is not just a principle of the Bible. It is the first principle of any civilized society. When God first revealed his law to Moses on Mount Sinai, he gave him the Ten Commandments. One of them was, you shall not murder, in Exodus 20:13. And you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Well, all that's going on today with all the scandals, let's call them, IRS on the home front, the NSA on the home front, we got Benghazi, we've got wars in the Middle East, we almost don't know which way to turn and to what issue to give our attention to, because there are so many. Well, we're trying to earn a living, raise our families and live our lives and be decent citizens, pay our taxes, respect our neighbors, all these sorts of good things conservatives do. So what just do we do in uncertain times like these? Well, there are times when you just go back to the drawing board, go back to the basics, the fundamentals. And that's one of them, the fundamental right to life. And you know, the Supreme Court back in 1973, when they ruled Roe versus Wade 40 years ago, imagine that, a 40-year anniversary this year, that the reason that action, the act of abortion, was legalized is because they upheld the right to privacy. The right of a woman's privacy over her own body to include her unborn child. Over the first unalienable right in the Declaration of Independence. And remember, the Constitution was written under the framework of the Declaration of Independence. Those two documents are indissolubly linked. They're inseparable. One tells us why we should be free. The other tells us how to go about preserving or securing the blessings of liberty, as our founders wrote. So that's the first one. And we're going to take a break in just a few minutes. I want to remind you that our show is called Inside Tennessee, sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council. You can call in and join the conversation at 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. And there's another Judeo-Christian principle that follows the dignity of human life. That's the first one. The second one, on the heels of the first, I'll get to in just a moment. Now that you're scratching your heads, principle number two, the traditional monogamous family. I'll probably get a lot of calls. I don't know, but we advertise that we are trying to restore our Judeo-Christian principles, so we might as well know what they are. In the traditional monogamous family, our society has been based upon the belief that the biblical view of traditional marriage and family is the backbone of a healthy social order. Since the joining together of Adam and Eve, marriage has been recognized as a holy union between one man and one woman, and out of that union comes children, born into a home with a father and a mother, to love them, nurture them, and teach them how to become healthy, productive, and responsible citizens. The plan of God, nature, and that sounds familiar too, because the Declaration of says, the Declaration of Independence declares, the laws of nature and nature's God are what entitle us to a separate and equal station. That is, the right to be free and not live under tyranny or oppression. When that plan is lost, marriage and family become meaningless, and a nation and its people will follow the road to ruin. World history has proven it over and over again. Preserving the traditional family is vital to the future of any great nation. So if we want to continue existing, then we're going to have to know what our Judeo-Christian values are and go back to the beginning. And we'll have an opportunity to preserve those principles and values in November 2014 when I know most of you who are listening will go to vote. Be voting for a governor and state representatives and senators. And you'll also get to vote on ballot issue number one. Just remember that. Ballot issue number one. You want to vote yes. Because that will help us preserve the right to life in Tennessee. So in just a minute, we're going to take a break. I'm going to wait for our first guest, Kathy Hinders, to call in. And we'll take some of your phone calls at our number, 718-305-7176. You're listening to Inside Tennessee. I'm your host, Rob Hathaway, sitting in for Dave Vance. Our friendly, local, pilot-in-command and GOP spokesman Duke Brooks calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers. So what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it. But you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hanger-flying on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. Got another few minutes before our first guest calls in, and I want to remind you that we're talking about the Judeo-Christian values that our nation founded upon, that Tennessee Action Council seeks to restore, and how you can help us accomplish that. And I'm going to leave you hanging for a minute because I want to tell you about the third one. The first one we talked about was the right to life. Actually, it's the principle of human dignity, the preservation of life. Every life is worthwhile. Number two is the traditional monogamous family. And number three, something maybe we didn't recognize or probably wasn't written in the food stamp, farm bill, is a national work ethic. And those details will be forthcoming in an upcoming show. I don't know when, probably not next week or the week after, but soon. So if you want to jot those down and tally them up at the end of the series, when we get to the last one, and I guess I'll let it out that there are seven that I want to talk to you about and bring to you. So please stay tuned. Thank you for listening to Inside Tennessee. Give us a call at 718-305-7176 until 9 p.m. Central. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to Inside Tennessee. You're listening to Rob Hathaway filling in for Dave Vance. Call in and join the conversation at 718-305-7176. And we're ready to talk to our first guest, Kathy Henners. You can read some of her writings at her blog at dailyrollcall.com. And we're going to welcome her to the show. Kathy?
Yes, good afternoon.
Hi there, how are you?
I'm good, how about yourself?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. We're a few minutes early, but that's okay. Who couldn't use a little more time these days?
That's what I figured. I'm always early, so I thought, I'd just call.
It pays to be early, and, you know, we got some space we can fill with those extra few minutes.
Sounds good to me.
Well, thank you for joining us and being with us, and please tell us about the upcoming events that are taking place on September 11th, if you would.
We have a great event coming up with the keynote speaker going to be Eric Stackelback, well-known on Fox News and the Christian Broadcast Network. He is totally on the forefront of what's happening in this country regarding the Muslim Brotherhood. His latest book is called The Brotherhood, America's Next Great Enemy. So the event starts 6:45 on Wednesday at the Embassy Suites Hotel, which is on Crescent Center Drive in Cool Springs. General admission is $20, and I believe and you show up at the door is $30. So it definitely behooves you to register early. There is a meet and greet, which I believe is probably sold out, which starts at 5:30, so those who paid an advance ticket get to actually meet Mr. Stackelback. I'm doing just a brief talk on the local infiltration of the Muslim Brotherhood. And then there'll be a memorial service and a few other speakers as well. So great event. Hate to see anybody miss it. Last year it was another really packed house, which is good to see. You know, people come out and want to commemorate this great event. So I urge everybody to head on over. All that information is on my website, which, as you said, is dailyrollcall.com. And then the new thing that we've done on my website is we've put a link to our new Facebook page. And we're up to almost 400 friends. So take a look around that site. We've got a couple new videos out about some local Muslim Brotherhood people and their organizations. So go there, friend me, and get in on the forum, you know, to talk about these things. So I'm still trying to talk Dave into getting a picture on his Facebook page. He right now is still blank. So we're trying to work on that.
Page or yours? On his Facebook page or your
on
Facebook?
On his Facebook page, yeah. So we're... We're trying to get him to change that blank face of his and put something on there. So he's getting the hang of it.
Well, maybe we'll see him on Wednesday night. And
yes.
You can take a, you know, surprise or a candid camera snapshot and put his picture on the form with probably his permission.
Very good idea. Very good idea. So, and I'll stand in the background with horns over his head or something.
You and others may also. So you're going to be in the program, and you're probably going to highlight what you said is local law enforcement news or updates or their infiltration with regards to the localities in Tennessee.
Yes.
And
yes, sir.
you're going to speak a little while to us as well.
Yeah, it's going to be very brief. We're trying to give most of the majority of the time to Eric Stackelback. So we probably will just give a brief synopsis of what some of the groups are that we've talked about for about a year now. We've been trying to get people to understand who they actually are and where they are. They're centralized in Nashville. Most of the groups are in Nashville, but mm-hmm. they spread out. We have Memphis and Knoxville, offices or headquarters of these particular groups. There's been some interesting videos that have just come out on YouTube about one of the key players that we've been talking about, Rumzia Suleiman. It's a very interesting video. It shows her actual connection with CARE, which is a Muslim Brotherhood organization. So there's a lot to learn. We'll be giving a handout specifically showing the groups and the names and then how people can contact us for me to, come and speak to them. I was just out in Dover Dave's way a couple weeks ago. And, you know, it's great for people to hear for the, you know, for the 10th time, even if it's the 10th time, to just to start recognizing these names and these organizations. You know, I've had people say to me, well, you've talked about them before. And I said, well, do you know who they are? And, you know, just to keep it fresh in their mind that these folks are present in Tennessee, specifically in Middle Tennessee. So the only way to get rid of them is to expose them and exploit them, whatever we need to do, delegitimize them, whatever it takes. So that's what I'll be touching on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to meeting meeting people. I've got a few friends on Facebook that I have no idea who they are, so I told them I would wear a big old hat, which I won't be wearing a big old hat, but we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a great night. Last year it was a great couple of hours. It was a great event, and I think it's just a great place for people to be on 9/11.
Absolutely, and unfortunately, we do have that date, and it's still probably fresh in many of our minds and the memory of those who are lost, and it's only appropriate we commemorate them honorably and by doing what you're doing, raising awareness, and what our other guests are doing, including Eric Stackelbeck, to bring to the forefront of people's minds what it is we are battling, what their aims are, their objectives are, and forewarned is forearmed. I think I got that right.
Yeah.
We have to know that they're not resting and they're not taking a break and say, well, that's we got one for us. Now we'll just you know, huddle up and plan our next one. They're active and they're still working on other schemes, we can probably assume, or actually not have to assume at all.
No, I mean, they're so active, and this is what I think in general people think that the Muslim Brotherhood is an Egypt or Middle Eastern problem, and, you know, they're fine with that. They like the fact that people don't understand that they're actually here, so exposing them is really the only tool that we have. And it's so prevalent, I never realized how bad the South was entrenched with the Muslim Brotherhood. I mean, they're in our schools. We've got several things that we're going to be talking about over the next couple of weeks regarding how they are entering the schools. And we've been documenting that when we have been talking about that the last few years. But they are very heavily into the schools right now. They're into training the law enforcement, which strikes a personal chord with me because I am a law enforcement instructor. So to see, you know, this kind of infiltration and indoctrination is almost personal at this point. So, you know, we just keep charging ahead and just hope that people start putting the connections together, because that's all it's about, is being able to connect the dots to show, when I talk about Rumzia Suleiman, look at the organizations that she is affiliated with and she has relationships with, and those are truly Muslim Brotherhood organizations. So if you can understand the connections and how people are related in these organizations, you know, they're so finely threaded, then you can start to grasp the concept that, wow, they have an actual headquarters here in Nashville. And I think what a lot of people don't know is that Hamas and Hezbollah have headquarters in Chicago, Illinois. So this is not that far off base. This is not a sci-fi film where it's only happening in the Middle East. So people... I'm starting to think it's almost too late for people to awaken because the indoctrination is so embedded. But at least if we keep, you know, for every one person that can tell another person, that can open a set of eyes, that's all we're looking for at this point. So we can fight an enemy that's very hard to even understand who they are. So that's what we're doing.
And you mentioned CARE. That's the... Council for American Islamic Relations. They're almost like a PR firm for the Muslim Brotherhood, are they not? They're always on the news whenever there's an event saying it wasn't anything to do with terrorism or Islamism or other organization. They've been keeping kind of a low profile lately, haven't they?
Not really. When you look at, well, in this area, to a point, yes. But when you look at, when you actually go to their website and you start looking at the lawsuits that they're filing on a daily basis, it's just outrageous, between the indoctrination and the lawsuits. And that's what I think people fear, especially like school districts who can't afford to be sued. They have, you know, this fear that if they say no to an Islamist organization to come in and teach children, that they'll be sued. And I've told some of these board members, well, you're going to get sued regardless if you let them in or not, because once their foot is in the door, if you don't give them another accommodation, they're going to sue you. So it really doesn't matter. I think at this point people just need to say no. And you can go ahead and you can sue us, but we're going to put our best foot forward and we're not going to allow the indoctrination in the schools. The textbook issue right now, which Dave and I have talked about before, is disgusting. The bias is just disgusting. So, you know, parents need to get involved. The community needs to get involved and say, no, we're not doing this. And eventually we'll win.
Brings to mind the term stealth jihad, I think it was described as, when you come into the schools and the way into the school is through the textbook. And, you know, there's not the guardians at the gate. I won't say they're asleep, but some things are getting through that we'd probably be better off having caught or stopped before it made its way into our school system. So being the vigilance, Thomas Jefferson didn't know how right he was when he said eternal vigilance is the price of liberty. And we've got a little catching up to do, I'd say. So, Kathy, I want to thank you for being on the show. We're coming up on a break, and our next guest will be up soon. I look forward. I plan to be at the event. We have already registered.
Okay.
And we look forward to hearing from you more in a couple of days. So thank you
again.
Right,
thank
for
you. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
You're listening Inside Tennessee, sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council. And we just heard from our first guest who's going to be appearing Wednesday, September 11th, at the commemorative event taking place at the Embassy Suites in Cool Springs. There are tickets still available. If you go online and look for either Tennessee Freedom Coalition or Eric Stackelbeck, or go to dailyrollcall.com, which is Kathy's blog site, and there may be a link there. But it's imperative we learn about the threats we face. And many of us probably know from where they came since that awful day in 2001. But we cannot forget. So we'll do our best here to keep you informed with our guests and other events. And you do your best to attend and let the people know who do the research and the investigation and the who are looking out for us, all of us, that their efforts do not go unappreciated. And we can reward them by simply showing up. So thanks again for listening. We're going to take a short break. And we'll be back in a few minutes.
When I have an asthma attack, I feel scared. It's like tiny nails in the air poke my lungs. I start to cough. Sometimes my parents have to take me to the hospital.
Today, 1 out of 13 children suffer from some form of asthma, accounting for nearly one-third of all emergency room visits.
I feel like I'm choking. It's kind of like an elephant is on my chest. A little whistle sound comes out when I breathe.
But while your child may suffer from asthma, asthma doesn't have to make your child suffer. There are simple ways you can prevent your child's next attack. To learn more, log on to www.noattacks.org or call your doctor. Because even one attack is one too many.
I feel like a fish with no water.
Brought to you by the EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee. I'm your host, Rob Hathaway, filling in for Dave Vance this Monday, September 9th, 2013. Before we get to our next guest, Chris Holton from the Center for Security Policy, I want to talk to you about something that you may be doing at other times during your day. So let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds, starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution, where America always wins. Our next guest is, as I mentioned, Chris Holton from the Center for Security Policy. I am going to welcome him to the show. And again, please call in with questions at 718-305-7176. Hello, Chris.
Well, good evening, sir. Thank you very much for having me on the program.
Well, thank you very much for being on, and we're going to talk with you, or you're going to talk with us, about Sharia-compliant finance and answer a few questions. And let's start with exactly what is Sharia-compliant finance, and why should people in Tennessee be concerned about it?
Well, that's a very good question. Sharia-compliant finance ostensibly is a form, a system of economics and finance in which Muslims follow the rules and regulations and laws of Sharia according to the Quran and the Hadiths various practices that have been handed down over the years. But, of course, you and I both know that at the time that all of that was created, there was no stock market, there were no bonds, there was no financial markets whatsoever. There was no derivatives. So in reality, what Sharia-compliant finance is a system of economics invented by men, a man-made system of economics that was conceived way back in the 1930s by an Islamic philosopher named Maududi, who saw it as a means to insulate the Muslim world from the Western colonial powers. So it originally was designed to segregate, if you will, the Islamic world from the Western world and from things like capitalism. Fast forward to the 1970s, specifically 1973, the Arab oil embargo, which created a tremendous amount of wealth in the Islamic Arab nations of the Middle East. And that transformed Sharia-compliant finance into an offensive weapon. In other words, it became the purpose of Sharia-compliant finance became to expand Islam and Sharia as opposed to protect the Islamic world against Western colonialism. It became a tool for Islamic imperialists. And today, the primary purpose of Sharia-compliant finance is, in fact, to promote Sharia. And for that very reason, people in Tennessee and people in the West and around the world should be very concerned about Sharia-compliant finance because it is designed to promote a theological, political, legal, military system, which is our enemy's threat doctrine, and which poses an existential threat to capitalism and to our Republican form of government and to self-determination throughout the West. So that's the basic reason why everyone should be concerned about Sharia-compliant finance. Now, there are other reasons to be concerned about Sharia-compliant finance, which get into the details of the industry and its practices, but the basic reason why we should be concerned about Sharia-compliant finance is because it is there to promote Sharia.
Right, and we can't, certainly that's another system of laws under which Muslims and those who believe in the wisdom of Islam are required very strictly to abide by, regardless of what our laws say in the United States. So they're going to practice this. Is it under the radar, pretty much off the screen, you know, not very open, or are they just open about it? Is it just widely promoted or broadcast by the proponents of Sharia-compliant finance?
Sharia-compliant finance is very widely and very publicly promoted, especially in Europe, for instance.
Okay.
It is taking hold in Europe, and unfortunately, much of the European financial community has embraced it because they see it as a means of capturing some of the wealth and assets that reside in the hands of wealthy Islamic oil wealth sheikhs and what have you. So if you go to places like France and Germany and especially Great Britain today, you'll find Sharia-compliant banks, you'll find Sharia-compliant mutual funds, you'll find Sharia-compliant mortgages, and by the way, many of those products are marketed to non-Muslims as well as to Muslims as a form of so-called ethical and socially responsible investing because it's following the rules of Sharia. And this is one of the inherent dangers of Sharia-compliant finance is that it desensitizes us to the evils of Sharia. It lulls us into a sense of complacency when it comes to Sharia, that maybe Sharia is not so bad. Sharia is a good thing. And look, Sharia-compliant finance has enabled us to attract a lot of foreign investment from places like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and the United Arab Emirates. So Sharia-compliant finance is a good thing. Maybe Sharia is a good thing. And that's really how it works. It's a form of Islamic imperialism, in fact.
Right.
And they're very open and aggressive about it, in fact, and it's coming to our shores as well. Wall Street has embraced Sharia-compliant finance, but there's just not much demand for Sharia-compliant financial products in the United States. But Wall Street is fully on board. And incidentally, so is the U.S. Treasury Department. On at least two occasions, the U.S. Treasury Department has held seminars promoting Sharia-compliant finance at the Treasury Department headquarters just steps away from the White House. So, unfortunately, and I might add, that occurred during the Bush years, during the Bush administration that the U.S. Treasury Department was promoting Sharia-compliant finance. So it exists here. There's not much demand for it yet, but if you look at Europe as a model for the march of Sharia in another 10, 15, 20 years, who knows what the situation will be.
Well, Gordon Gekko, remember that line in the movie Wall Street, greed is good. So it seems to trump anything else. We drop our guard. Our government brought it to us as far back as 1973. And here we are. I wouldn't say openly embraced, but no one, this is not really a particular topic that you hear much on any talk radio stations. Maybe we're the first one. Maybe we broke some ground here. But it's not something I don't think if you follow it, if you're not focused in on it, it might not be something you just pay attention to unless you're a wealthy investor and wants to make more money or put your money in a safe haven.
There's really no attention in the media to Sharia compliance finance, and what little attention there is in the media, frankly, usually has a positive spin, unfortunately.
Right.
The industry bills itself as ethical investing. What they say is, and this is how they promote their products in Europe, they say, look, this is ethical and socially responsible investing. We do not invest in companies that deal in pornography or alcohol, things like that. That has
right.
a lot of appeal to a lot of people. The problem is, that is the tip of the iceberg when it comes to Sharia compliance finance. And there is much about Sharia compliance finance which is decidedly unethical and problematic.
Let's
and
talk about that
point.
Let me. Sorry, I'm sorry to cut you off, Chris. We got to come up on a break. If we could just kind of hold that thought for a moment, we'll take a little break and come back and have another few minutes for some more questions. And then we'll continue on with our conversation with the time we have left. Okay.
Thanks, sir.
Of course. Please stand by, and we'll be back momentarily. Don't let the liberal media fool you. There's no war on women in the conservative movement. And we've got proof right here every Tuesday night. Women Patriots with Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing comes to you at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central here on conservativenationmedia.com. Listen up, then call in and be heard by real women who are real patriots. Incidentally, conservative guys are welcome at our very own B&B, too. Women Patriots with Brenda Ward and Barbara Buffing, Tuesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on Conservative Nation Media, where America always wins. We're talking with Chris Holton from the Center for Security Policy about some Sharia-compliant finance, and we'd love to take some of your calls. Our call-in number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. You want to go back with Chris for some more questions? Chris, in about 3 minutes, about another minute, we have to go to another break, but I'll ask you another question, and we'll give your best answer, I suppose, in that time frame before we
sure.
take another break. And so you've mentioned a lot of things about Sharia-compliant finance. What are some of the methods used to raise funds that are Sharia-compliant, and what are some of the major institutions in our state and nation that are involved? You mentioned Wall Street.
Well, Sharia-compliant finance really runs the gamut. I mean, you have Sharia-compliant mutual funds, you have Sharia-compliant
uh-huh.
banking institutions, you have Sharia-compliant real estate. I mean, the only unique Sharia-compliant product that I can think of is something called the Sukuk, which is also known as an Islamic bond. What they do, under Sharia, they're not allowed to charge or to receive interest. So what they basically have done is they've created this so-called Islamic bond or Sharia-compliant bond, also known as a Sukuk, in which
mm-hmm.
they don't charge interest, but they charge a host of fees and charges, which magically tend to track prevailing interest rates, and they call it Sharia-compliant. The only difference between a Sharia-compliant bond and a normal bond, of course, at the end of the day, is that charges under a Sharia-compliant bond are much higher than they would be under a conventional bond. Or conventional debenture. Sharia-compliant products take a variety of forms. Now, look, there are many institutions in the West, in the United States, that are Sharia-compliant or have Sharia-compliant products that they offer in some way or another. I can't go through the entire list, obviously, but
no.
If you go to my website, at shariafinancewatch.org, at shariafinancewatch.org, we have a list of Sharia-compliant financial institutions here in the United States. It includes companies that participate in the Sharia compliant markets, as well as companies that are themselves Sharia compliant. Most of the big banks in the United States are Sharia compliant. If you want to avoid or have a Sharia compliant division or offer Sharia compliant products, if you want to avoid that, the best way to do it is to do business with a community bank in your area rather than do business with the big banks. You know, Bank of America has Sharia compliant products that they offer. Barclays, Morgan Chase, Citibank.
Chris?
Yep. Yes.
We're going to have to cut you off again. I'm sorry to do that to you. We got to take a break. We'll come back in 2 minutes, and then we'll have more time for more questions and some phone calls, okay?
Sure. Great.
Okay, thanks. We'll be back in a couple minutes with Chris Holton.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
Hey, Billy.
Yeah?
Do you want to go to the state fair?
Yeah.
Do you want to ride the roller coaster?
Yeah.
The big one?
Yeah.
The one with the reverse flip?
Yeah!
Well, you can't. You see, Billy, when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have done with it, including going to the state fair.
Oh, man.
Cheer up. This year, your parents will make it right. They're going to visit energysavers.gov, where they'll get tips on how to save energy and money. Then they'll add extra insulation and get a few of those Energy Star appliances. They could save hundreds of dollars a year. And you know what, Billy?
What?
They'll take you to the state fair next year.
But I want to go this year.
I know you do, Billy. I know you do. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
We're back on Inside Tennessee, and we're talking to Chris Holton from the Center for Security Policy about Sharia-compliant finance. And we have a caller on the line. Chris, you ready to field a question or two from our first caller of the evening?
I'd be happy to.
Thank you. Let's go to our first caller. Hello, caller, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, this is Joanne. Chris, good to hear from you. And
let me tell you, I know this lady. She's one of the most wonderful people in the whole state of Tennessee, if not in the whole world.
Yeah, I pay Chris a lot of money to say that stuff. But Chris Holton is the one
that's
that,
not true.
Flattery will get you everywhere.
Chris is the one that actually taught me about Sharia finance, and I have a question, Chris. That I don't know what the current status is, but I believe I once understood that the Amana Funds was one of the largest Sharia compliance. Sharia finance compliant mutual funds, and I think they were being traded in Tennessee. Can you comment on that?
Yes, the Amana Group of Mutual Funds, in fact, are probably the largest Sharia compliant group of mutual funds, probably the largest Sharia compliant securities in America, and yes, they trade in Tennessee. They trade in every state, they are, let me tell you, we've done a lot of background research on the Amana Group of Funds, and one of the things that we found in looking through their literature is that they quoted very extensively in their literature the Sheikh Yusuf al-Qardawi, who, of course, is the Muslim Brotherhood's ideological mentor, as it were, who was exiled to Qatar by President Mubarak and eventually came back to Egypt when the Muslim Brotherhood took over. And this is a very, very creepy guy. I like to call him Creepy Qardawi for many of the fatwa that he's issued. over the years. You know, he's issued fatwa, you know, instructing men on how they're to beat their wives. He has endorsed the practice of female genital mutilation. He has said that it is fine to attack civilians in Israel because there's no such thing as an actual civilian in Israel. They're all combatants. And he also called on Muslims to travel to Iraq to wage war against USGIs when we were running Operation Iraqi Freedom there. He's been banned from traveling to the United States since 1999 because of his ties to extremist groups. He's just an all-around bad guy. He also happens to be probably the foremost Sunni Sharia scholar in the world. He's been on the boards of many Sharia-compliant financial institutions. He's not on a MANA's Sharia advisory board, but if you read their literature, last time I examined the MANA's literature, they basically took large swaths of his work and quoted liberally from it as their justification for Sharia compliance. I mean, it's almost as if this guy laid the ideological basis for them forming their mutual fund. And this guy is an enemy of America. And this is the largest group of mutual funds that are Sharia compliant in our country.
Yeah, one other...
You mention his name again, please.
His name is Yusuf Al-Qaradawi.
Yusuf Al-Qaradawi. Fairly common name. I mean, fairly well heard of name, I guess. Or infamous, however you want to put it.
I think Yusuf is a common name. I'm not sure if Qaradawi is common or not. But he is the world's most prominent Sunni Sharia scholar. He is a household name. He's got a show on Al Jazeera called Sharia and Life. And it's watched by 60 million people around the world every week. So he's a very prominent Muslim, no question about it.
Joanne, I want to thank you for your call. I'm going to get some more questions for Chris, so I trust you'll
thank
be
you.
Listening for the next few minutes while we continue our conversation. Thank you for calling in. You have a great
thank
evening.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you very much for calling in. Great to hear from you.
Well, Chris, I got a few more questions. We got until about 8:10, maybe another 10 minutes minus a few breaks. So I'm going to move along to some more questions. And callers, please call in. We give you about a minute to ask your question and get an answer. We extended that to Joanne because she was so gracious with her introduction. Or actually, that was Chris who was so very gracious and about welcoming her to the show. So thanks for your help, Chris.
Well,
so
it's my pleasure. Let me tell you, I do happen to know that lady personally, and
very nice.
And I know her family and some of her friends. And let me tell you, they're great people in Tennessee. They're great people in Tennessee.
Agreed. Well, let's go on to another question. Chris, how can investors know for sure that their investments are not part of the Sharia-compliant finance in any way?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, it's very unlikely that if you have an investment that it is Sharia-compliant, okay? That's number one.
Right.
Most of the institutions that participate in Sharia-compliant finance on the Sharia Finance Watch website, so you can check that. But at the end of the day, there is no requirement, there are no rules and regulations and laws that specifically deal with disclosure when it comes to Sharia compliance. So that's a real problem, and it's something that needs to be addressed on the federal level because that's where securities are actually regulated. There's one state, Louisiana, that passed a law that dealt with that issue, but it's The categories of securities that are regulated on the state level are so narrow that it doesn't have much impact. And what we really need is at that level there to be rules and regulations about disclosure when it comes to compliant finance. Because right now, theoretically, you could invest in a mutual fund that was Sharia compliant, and they could merely refer to it as ethical investing or socially responsible investing, and they wouldn't have to disclose all the details of what that really meant. There's nothing that says that they have to say this is based on Sharia.
Obviously, no prohibition, so nobody at the Securities and Exchange Commission, there's no red flags, in other words, or are there? Are there any indicators that we monitor their transactions or make ourselves aware of a organization that is Sharia compliant with regards to finances?
Well, let me tell you, the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Treasury Department in general is no help at all, I promise you. They are not looking into this. They are not concerned about it. When some of my colleagues in the industry that I participated in briefed members of the Treasury Department on Sharia for the first time way back in probably 2008, the response from the regulator, the chief regulator who was in charge of this stuff at the time, was, I don't know what Sharia is, but it can't be what you guys say it is. That's what
right.
the response was from the person at the Treasury Department who was tasked with investigating and preventing terrorism financing. That's a very disturbing statement for that person to make, because one of the chief concerns of Sharia-compliant finance is the fact that it does provide a backdoor to reverse money laundering and a method through which terrorist groups can receive funding. It's been done. Bank El Taqwa was a bank, incidentally, that upon whose board Sheikh Yusuf El Qaradawi sat, which was sending money to terrorist groups. This is not a theory. This has actually happened. And what it happens through is through a system called zakat. Zakat is a form of tithing in Islam by which every Muslim who is able to is required to give 1/40th of his wealth per year to 8 acceptable destinations for zakat. The 7th acceptable destination for zakat is to those fighting in the way of Allah. And then that term is defined.
Right.
Those who are fighting in the way of Allah is determined to be those who are fighting Islamic military operations for whom there is no allotment on an army roster. Now think about that for a second. Those who are fighting Islamic military operations for whom there is no allotment on the army roster. What does that sound like to you?
Yeah, that's not a good idea. You can't no allotment.
That sounds
on the army
like sounds like terrorists, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Well, it's because and look, these are laws and rules that were written 600 or 700 years ago. So that's how long this has been going on. And when Wall Street tells us that they've done due diligence on this and they know that their zakat is not going to charities that are involved in terrorism, I am very skeptical about that, because if you read the 9/11 Commission report and you do a lot of background research into this like I have, you discover that there are dozens of Islamic charities that have been found to fund jihad, violent jihad, terrorism. I mean, they have been found by the U.S. Treasury Department. They've been found by British authorities. They've been found by other authorities around the world. It is one of the chief issues that we deal with on the Sharia Finance Watch blog. In fact, I'm in the middle of writing a new article on that very topic right now, which will be published in the next day or two.
Great. Hey, Chris, you know it's that time again. This is great information. I really enjoy listening to you. We've got a hard break coming up on, so another couple of minutes, if you'll stick around, we'll finish up with some questions following that break and continue to get an education on this probably often all too ignored topic, okay?
Thank you, sir.
Yes, of course. Thank you. We'll be right back.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict, the war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Hi, Tennessee. I'm your host, Rob Hathaway, sitting in for Dave Vance. We're talking to Chris Holt from the Center for Security Policy about Sharia-compliant firearms. Getting a great education, Chris. Call in if you have questions. You want to make comments at 718-305-7176. So we've got about 5-6 minutes left, Chris, so I'm going to fire off a few questions. And if you could be, about a minute or maybe two with each one, depending, I guess, on the nature of the question. We can extend that.
I will do my utmost.
...learned that our government appointed Samar Ali, an expert in Sharia compliance, to head the International Division of the Tennessee Economic Division. Are you familiar with her and her background, operations, if you will?
I'm not personally familiar with Samar Ali. I'm familiar with the case. And as I said during one of my recent visits to Nashville, in a speech I gave there, was that it's very curious that of all the people in the state of Tennessee who could be qualified to hold a position for international economic development to promote the state of Tennessee, that they would choose someone that was A, Sharia-compliant financial specialist, and B, an intern in the Obama White House. I found those two facts to be very, very curious. And
go figure.
I just don't know what to say other than that. She's a Sharia-compliant financial specialist, and the purpose of Sharia-compliant finance is to promote Sharia. That pretty much says it all.
It does. And we have, of course, Tennessee, the American Muslim Advisory Council. That's a cabinet-level office or position. And I don't know the last time I heard of the American Christian Advisory Council or the American Jewish Advisory Council.
I was about to ask you how they were doing. How is the American Christian Advisory Council doing?
You're reading my mail.
What about the American Jewish Advisory, the Jewish Advisory Council in Tennessee? Are they very active there?
There's a chat room going on here.
Waiting
for that?
Makes no sense. Makes no sense at all.
I had a little trouble hearing you there. So, yeah, that's right. That's right. We've dominated every sphere of government. So we can't. We're not welcome anymore, I guess. Well, there's somebody in the chat making some very comments about in compliant finance. And you mentioned the Sunrise Equities. Is that something you're familiar with?
No, that is not
no.
That's
what it
a
is.
Name that rings any bells. Sunrise Equities. Let's see.
Well, there's
not on my
one.
List.
You, okay, I might have gotten it wrong. How about the what is the Jerusalem Fund, and what connection is there to Tennessee? Can you tell us about anything
okay.
about that?
Well, you know, I know a little bit about the Jerusalem Fund. There's been some research done into this, which I have viewed, and I have not conducted the research firsthand, so I don't want to take credit for it, but there's been some excellent research done into this organization. And let me say that in the fields of intelligence, associations between individuals and organizations are vital to building the bigger picture of how things work and who's involved in who. So that is a significant factor in associations. Now, the Jerusalem Fund that you mentioned, if you go back into the history of this organization, which is ostensibly a nonprofit charitable organization that's raising money to send to the needy in the Middle East, if you go back and look at the association's founders and some of its original board members and what have you, there are some disturbing associations involving the Jerusalem Fund's people and some people involved with the Muslim Brotherhood. In the intelligence world, that is very significant. That's the kind of thing that you look at. It's literally where there's smoke, there's fire. Well, there's certainly some smoke there in terms of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Jerusalem Fund. Because of associations of people who were involved with the Jerusalem Fund at the time of its founding and people who are known operatives of the Muslim Brotherhood.
We seem to know all the players. We just don't always know.
We
seem to know all the players, just not maybe their shenanigans or their antics or their methods.
Well, look, when names like Samuel Arion Abdulrahman Al-Mahmoudi come up as being associated with individuals who have relationships with the Jerusalem Fund at the time of its founding, that's something to be interested in, because Samuel Arion and Abdulrahman Al-Mahmoudi are both Muslim Brotherhood operatives who later found themselves in federal prison on various charges related to activities involving jihad. That's something in the intelligence world people would look very, very closely at. But unfortunately, in the policy world, in the world of government, and the world of business, they don't view it in the same way, unfortunately.
Well, those names harken back to the Holy Land Foundation trial and the numerous unindicted co-conspirators. And that made headlines. That's big news. But since then, have there been any real headlines and that grab your attention about these fundraising that go towards financing terrorism in a place we may very well get involved in yet again?
Well, from time to time, we do see cases come up. But we haven't had anything huge like the Holy Land Foundation trial, primarily because of Eric Holder. Remember, there were many unindicted co-conspirators in the Holy Land Foundation trial. It was the intention of the Dallas U.S. Attorney's Office to pursue those unindicted co-conspirators and to pursue prosecutions of them. And Attorney General Eric Holder essentially shut down those investigations and prosecutions. Had he not done that, Lord knows what would have been found and what we would be doing right now with many of these unindicted co-conspirators, such as the Islamic Society of North America, the Northern American Islamic Trust, the Council on American Islamic Relations. I could go on and on.
Council on American Islamic Relations. You could, yes. Unfortunately, though, you probably know what time it is again. It's not time for a break, but we're out of time. We have you scheduled till 10 after the hour, and we're just a little bit beyond that. But, Chris, I want to thank you very much for the information and your willingness to come on and be a spokesperson and a watchman against this this very unknown, unfamiliar attack on our own because of things. It's another set of laws. It's another set. What it is. You described it very well, and I want to thank you for being our guest.
Thank you very much for having me. I'll be more than willing to come on anytime you all want me to.
You're with SyriaFinanceWatch.org. And we can find out some other organizations that are involved in this financing operation by going there. Chris Holt, Center of Security Policy, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, sir. Good night.
Good night, sir. You're listening Inside Tennessee with your host, Rob Hathaway, sitting in for Dave Vance. A very informative discussion with our previous guest, and my feeling is they're just going to get better because we have another guest scheduled to be on actually a few minutes ago. But I know Lori Cardoza Moore is a very gracious person, and she'll indulge us a few minutes, I believe, to introduce her and let you know what she's going to talk about tonight. Lori Cardoza Moore is the founder and head of the Pro-Israel Christian Support Group, Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, or PJTN. The organization's mandate is to educate Christians on their biblical responsibility to support the Jewish brethren, our Jewish brothers. Remember, we talked about the Judeo-Christian values that founded our nation. She is also a special envoy to the United Nations for the World Council of Independent Christian Churches. But since she's not on the line at the moment, we won't be talking to her right away. So let's take this opportunity to get one of our breaks in. And when she calls, we'll have that discussion with her. And if not, we'll find something else to talk about. ConservativeNationMedia.com is growing. And we couldn't think of a better way to expand our lineup than to give our very own Bing Fisher his very own show. Uncle Bing Fisher brings his engineer's insight and love of America to American by Design, Sunday evenings at 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 Central, immediately following Soldier of Patriotism with Michael Smith on ConservativeNationMedia.com. So stay with Conservative Nation Media 7 days a week, since we're making some big changes and we're just getting started. American by Design with Bing Fisher, Sundays at 6 Eastern, 5 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. Thank you for being with us. We'll be right back after this short break on Inside Tennessee.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Whether you're on active duty, a veteran, or just admire American Armed Forces, there's no better place to get the widest variety of militaria than at Highlands Militaria. Highlands Militaria is one of America's premier distributors of Fox tactical gear and outdoor products. Veteran-owned and operated, Highlands Militaria offers new and used uniforms and insignia from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and today, with an emphasis on airborne and special operations insignia, gear, collectibles, and uniforms.
If you need to replace a cherished badge or unit patch, or just want to gear up for your next outdoor adventure, go to Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria, where you'll find the best supply of the military gear you need. Shipping is always free with one-day handling time, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. Highlands Militaria at stores.ebay.com/Highlands-Militaria. And thank you for your service.
And we're back on Inside Tennessee. I'm your host, Rob Hathaway, sitting in for Dave Vance. Please feel free to give us a call. We encourage and invite your calls at 718-305-7176. And we're on until 9. And I introduced, perhaps a little prematurely, our next guest, Laurie Cardoza Moore. We don't know the delay, but she's not on the line yet. But as I mentioned, we're going to talk to her about proclaiming justice to the nations. It's from a scripture in Hosea 3 that I don't actually have in front of me, but you can look it up and see where it says where she got her title or of her organization. So, Laurie, if you're out there listening, we'd be very happy to hear from you. I have in front of me a press release. One of the things we're going to talk about with Laurie is the textbook controversy in Tennessee about the anti-Semitic bias, anti-Israeli bias in a textbook is called The Cultural Landscape, and a course offered at our high schools and schools in Williamson County. It's an AP history course, and the textbook is called Human Geography, The Cultural Landscape. And there was a press release that was issued on July 31st of this year. And I don't know if many of you got to see that information, but she's calling in now, and rather than steal her thunder, I'm going to let her do the talking, and we'll ask her some questions, and then we can take your calls, and you can speak to her as well. Hello, Laurie.
Hey, Rob.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good, as am I, and we're enjoying these high holy days.
Yes, they are. Absolutely.
There's a lot to talk about, Laurie. There's a lot going on in the world. There's some global issues. There's some local issues. You can, bring us up to date on a number of things. But why don't we start, if you wouldn't mind? I did tell our listeners who you were. You're the founder and president of Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, a pro-Israel Christian support group. And your mandate is that to educate Christians on our biblical responsibility to support our Jewish brethren, and that you are also an envoy, special envoy to the UN.
Yes.
And have I left anything out?
Let me see. Mom, wife.
yes. The important one.
Also, community organizer. Let me see. What hat am I going to wear today?
Since you've been around the world, at least with the UN, there's a significant development in the Syrian conflict as it pertains to our position. Is there something that you can elaborate on that I can allude to and bring you in on in that regard?
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting to see how the Obama administration is scrambling now to try to keep some support in the Senate and in the House with regards to attacking Syria. And all I can say, Rob, is thank God that Americans are weighing in on this issue and how critically important it is as you and I had discussed last night, I'm not a big supporter of going to war with Syria. I think there are several areas that are problematic in this situation, especially the fact that why are we doing this now? We have evidence, and evidence was presented at the United Nations back in March, that the rebels used gas back then, and nothing was done. The administration did not decide at that time when the rebels were using the gas that it was a problem. But now all of a sudden it has become a serious problem. Another thing that we're finding out there is that the Christians in Syria, this is another interesting issue. We have had an Orthodox Pope murdered. We've had a priest, a Catholic priest's head cut off. We've had Christian women raped and girls raped. We've had Christians threatened that if they did not join the rebel forces, they would have their heads cut off. And we didn't see Obama coming in or any member, Kerry. Nobody came and weighed in on the atrocities created by the rebels, and these are the people that Obama wants us to get behind, provide military aid, provide financial support to unseat Assad. What we are hearing is from Christians in Syria that they did not have a problem with Assad. That, yes, he's a dictator. This is how people are used to living in the Middle East.
Right.
It's much like what happened in Romania.
Egypt.
When remember when the wall fell. In Romania, a lot of people were free. They were set free. They were able to move to the United States and live in freedom, in democracy. And many of the Romanians went back home because they didn't know how to live without somebody telling them how they're supposed to live. And we, in our Western culture, we're used to, you know, living in a democratically free atmosphere. We know, you know, we're entrepreneurs. The government doesn't tell us how to live. But when you grow up from generation after generation after generation in a dictatorial environment, and then you say, well, we're going to try to free these people and give them a taste of freedom, not everybody liked it. And there were many Romanians who went back to Romania to live under that oppression. Because they just can't handle it. And the same is true about the Middle East. Israel is the only democracy that you know, has been able to go over there and flourish and be able to create a civil society without chaos. They have a Knesset, a government, that has not just Israeli Jews, but they have Israeli Arabs who sit in the Knesset so that the Arabs have a voice in the discussion, in the debate. So we're asking, you know, we're wanting the American people to give money, to give weapons, provide aid, which was going to cost money, to a regime or to rebels who are bent on our destruction. These are the same people, Rob, that attacked us on 9/11. This is Al-Qaeda.
And we're being told we're being told they're moderates. It's hard to envision a moderate fighting alongside radicals or extremists that, you know, they might, what, do they fight a little less intensely than their radical counterparts? It's very hard to make that distinction, I would imagine, but yet our senators can do it.
Right. There's a little town that has just been captured by the so-called rebels, and they're in a city called Malula. And it's primarily a Christian town. There's about 3,000 people. And now these people are being slaughtered by the rebels. And do you hear the Obama administration, John Kerry, condemning these acts and backing away from the rebels? No. This is unacceptable when you have Christian groups who are saying, look, we didn't have a problem with Assad. It reminds me of what happened under Mubarak. and look at Gaddafi in Syria. I mean,
right.
We go from country to country to country. The common thread through all those countries
right.
is the Christians who lived in those environments did not mind living under those dictators, that at least they were able to live and worship freely. They weren't risking their lives. They weren't being slaughtered during Sunday services. And as soon as this administration goes in and says, we're going to upset the apple cart, we're going to help get behind the rebels to unseat the dictator, and what has happened? It's wrought havoc in the Middle East. We've done more destruction in the last 2 years of this administration in the Middle East than anyone would have ever imagined. And I don't know, with what we're doing, I don't know how long it's going to take, Rob, for us to get to have any
right.
respect or any proper standing in the Middle East. We certainly don't have it with Israel anymore. The United States looks weak now. We're not the leader. And this is what's, you know, absolutely devastating. I was listening to Bill O'Reilly earlier in his opening monologue, and he even
yes.
said it. The United States of America is not the United States of America we grew up in. And it's very disheartening. As hard as it is for us to say that, this administration, this president in the two, you know, the first term and now into his first year of his second term has done more damage to destroy this country. And Rob, it's going to take a miracle for this country to come back. The only way this nation is going to come back is if we, the people, take our place in politics, in government, and start having more of a say in what's happening around the world and even in our country. And if we don't, there is no hope for the future of this country. That's where we are. We're on the edge.
On the brink, yes.
And
so many don't realize that.
No, and unfortunately, I think a lot of people are so busy with their lives that they're, you know, people want to be entertained. We're more interested in, you know, who's playing football on Sunday night or Sunday afternoon than we are about what's happening in the political sphere, you know, to this country. So
sure.
it's going to take people, you and me and many others, taking this country back. And so that's kind of my take on what's going on in the Middle East. And when you have, it's interesting because when you have the same opinion as the United Nations, you know, that's pretty unsettling. For the UN to even recognize that this administration is heading over the brink. You know, and Russia's coming out and even saying that we have to protect the Christians, but you don't hear the supposed leader of the free world saying we have to.
It's unanswerable. It's inexplicable, I think, is what I'm looking for. And yet the irony is just, it's uncanny, if you can describe irony that way, that to make us look strong in his eyes, our president's eyes, the right
mm-hmm.
thing to do, or the strategy is to attack a country that we have mixed intelligence over who's responsible for those chemical weapons attacks. And in the first opening statement or question was that there are new events or new developments, and isn't it that we're learning that the rebels have admitted that they accidentally ignited,
mm-hmm.
and I put quotes around that word. I use that term very
mm-hmm.
loosely, Ori, ignited weapons of mass destruction to, you know, and the motivation wasn't described, but it would probably not be a stretch to ponder that it
mm-hmm.
was to draw us into a war because they're
mm-hmm.
losing ground against the Assad regime. What is your... If you can hold that thought, Corey, for a minute, we've got to take a break. We're upon one of those hard breaks I've got to take, and if you would please stay on the line, I'd be very happy to continue our conversation until the top of the hour. We have you on the show
Absolutely.
The rest of the evening, so we got plenty to talk about. Thank you. We'll be right back. We're talking with Lori Cardoza Moore on Inside Tennessee.
It feels like you're frozen, petrified. You're struggling with your mortgage payments. The bills begin to pile up. Not knowing what to do, you do nothing at all. And that's the worst thing you can do. Because if you take action, if you do something about your mortgage problems, you're far more likely to get the most positive outcome. Making Home Affordable is a free government program. Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about the options that are right for you. Real help, real answers, right now. Call 888-995-HOPE or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov and do something about your mortgage problems. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
One of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. If it happens to you, it may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. So don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service, 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. The network may not cover all transactions, and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com. Then click on the LifeLock banner. You'd be very glad you did. We're back on Inside Tennessee. We're talking to Lori Cardoza Moore, the president and founder of Proclaiming Justice to the Nations, who's giving us an update on what's happening in the Middle East. And if that's not something that's been in the news 24/7, I don't know what has. Lori, thank you for staying with us and for giving us another education on what we need to be aware of that's actually going on that we probably won't hear elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Well,
so now,
yep.
No, go. You mentioned that we had stable relationships in the Middle East with three governments that are now, two at least have been severely disrupted, one actually ruined in Libya, toppled, and then there's Egypt, which I would say that calling it unstable would be a vast understatement. It's in turmoil. And some of the news coverage has fallen to the wayside. And now it's all about Syria, and they have one thing in common, and that was that the administration has seemed to have been involved in the turmoil and the disruption of a normal or at least a manageable lifestyle by those countries' Christian population.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how does that portend for Israel? Can you talk to us about that a little bit?
Oh, yeah, certainly. Well, you know, you have to ask yourself the question, Rob. What's the goal of this administration? What is the president doing? Because either every place he goes erupts in chaos, and either he knows what he's doing, or he doesn't know what he's doing.
And chaos follows every place he goes. Look at what's happened to our country. Look at the chaos that has been created by this administration. We as Americans feel like, you know, our head is spinning because every time we turn around, we have another battle we have to fight with this administration. Then we go into Tunisia, into Libya. Look at what happened with Libya. The Christians in Libya were able to live and worship, and Gaddafi protected them. They didn't have, they weren't running for their lives. Their daughters weren't being raped. Their churches were not being desecrated and destroyed or shot up on during Sunday morning services. Look at Benghazi. You know, we're 2 days away from the 9/11 event that where the Twin Towers went down, but now we have another 9/11 that we will have to remember because of the inept government that is in place. Was it inept? Was it planned? Were they really running guns from Libya? Were we taking guns from the terrorists in Libya and running them into Syria through Turkey? Is that what happened to our ambassador and to those three brave Americans? We still don't have the answers to all of that. But we know that Obama's handprint is all over it. And then we look at what happened in Egypt. Egypt started out to be, you know, Egypt started out as a movement on Facebook by a young woman whom I met at a conference. I had been asked to participate as a panelist at a Muslim women's conference. And the conference was talking, the topic was about the impact of the Arab Spring on women in the Middle East. And most of the women were Muslim, and I was invited to speak about the impact of the Arab Spring on Christian and Jewish women. So it was quite enlightening. Uh-huh. But this woman shared with us how she started the whole movement on the Arab Spring on Facebook, and immediately it was taken over by the Muslim Brotherhood, the terrorists. And then we have our administration who came in. Yes, completely hijacked. And here's another thing that's interesting to remind our listeners. 3 months before Mubarak was ousted, the Obama administration had sent $2 billion in aid, financial aid to the government, $2 billion in military aid, including weapons, tanks, aircraft. And then all of a sudden, 3 months later, Obama's beating the war drums and standing with the ouster of Hosni Mubarak. When Hosni Mubarak, even though he was a dictator once again, Christians were able to live peaceably. We were getting email messages out from the church, from Christians, the Coptic Christians, saying, America, don't oust Mubarak. We can't have Morsi. We don't want Morsi. And what did we do? This administration got behind the Muslim Brotherhood leader. The Muslim Brotherhood leader who 3 months prior to him being elected into office in Egypt that, basically accused Israel of being a Zionist enemy and that Jerusalem would be the capital of Egypt. But, of course, this president, this administration didn't see it as a problem. And so, of course, what did we do? We got behind the Morsi government, and what did Morsi try to do? He tried to change Egypt, the Egyptian government, in a year. Look at the similarities of what this administration, Obama, is doing with the United States and our government. Look at the similarities. We have to ask our question: Is this a coincidence, or is it just happenstance that it's just that there are two similar situations going on here? Then you look at what's happening in Syria. All of a sudden, you know, 2 years ago, I believe it was John Kerry and his wife were having dinner with Assad. So what happened in the last 2 years that would cause this administration to not sit down at the negotiating table and say, look, Assad, we think we've got some problems here. We think you've got some issues with running your government and you're not being fair to your people. Can we talk about this? No. We immediately get behind a terrorist entity to try to overthrow another government. Yes, Assad is a dictator, but there again, Rob, the Christians are still saying today. The Christians
right.
that are getting, there was a Christian woman I heard on Glenn Beck's show earlier. She has family in Syria. She is hearing what's really going on there. And she's saying, look, the Christians don't have a problem with Assad. At least they were able to worship freely. Now Christians are being mutilated and being threatened. We know that
yes, they
many Christians.
The whole country.
Absolutely. And many Christians have left, and they're sitting on the border of Lebanon and Syria because there seems to be a safe zone right there for them to reside. But it's you know, you have to look at this, Rob, and you have to say, okay, like I said before, is it a coincidence or is this intentional? And if it's intentional, then, Rob, what are we as the people of the United States of America going to do about this government?
Well, Laurie, I think what we're going to be facing in the next day, actually, the vote that Congress is going to hold or cast does not come till after the 11th, if I'm not, or on the 11th. And now what this is all leading to is a showdown between the legislative branch, our Congress, and the president. And he's all but lost support from nearly all of Congress. And what I think is the linchpin in this this contemplated action to take military action in Syria is whether he will ignore the wishes or the votes of Congress, who are our representatives. You asked the question, what are we the people doing or can do about this international conflict? Well, we have elected officials who represent us. At least that's how it's supposed to work in our Congress. Now, we have to be fair. We do have representatives who do take interest and take a stand for their constituents. And we're very fortunate to have one of those of our own in Marsha Blackburn. And we have to trust that they do indeed have America's best interest in mind. Now, if they do, and they vote, they don't authorize this president to take the action he wishes to, and he does it anyway, that is no longer probably suspicion, but it's gone to being complicit.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's too far of a stretch.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
absolutely.
You know,
well, John
it's interesting
said
times, the Chinese say.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
yep.
McCain threatened Obama and said to him, if he put boots on the ground, that would be treason. That would be treasonous.
If he acts without the authority from Congress, that is treasonous as well, in my opinion. And, you know, we'll have our scholars probably debate that on the constitutional aspects of that. But please go ahead.
Absolutely. He is put in place to represent we the people. And as you said, it is our Congress that is closest to the people. That's why it's so important that the people, those who are listening tonight, if they have not contacted their congressmen and their senators and weighed in, I encourage you to do it first thing in the morning. Obama's going to get up and he's going to make
Absolutely.
His plea to the American people tomorrow night. But we have to send the message to him and continue. And the numbers, I've been following the polls that are going on. They were just reporting on Fox News earlier, and the majority of Americans, even the Democrats, oppose going in Syria. And you know, you hear the talking heads, and they're all saying, oh, people are war-weary. We are not war-weary.
Right.
Americans love a good fight, and when there is injustice, we are right there. We will be the first ones. When we were attacked on 9/11, we had our young men signing up to get into the military to serve. We're not war-weary, but we do not trust the commander-in-chief to be able to execute, go into, and reasonably decide whether this is worth fighting. These are terrorists who are fighting a dictatorship. It is not like we're trying to put a republic form of democracy into effect in the Middle East. And so if we don't, Rob, if we don't speak up and start taking control of our government, then we are going to lose it to a dictator. We are putting a dictator in place.
Let's hold that thought for now, Lori, if I could ask you to. We're going to take another break, you know, pay the bills. We've got to take a breather for a minute, so if you'll just please stay with us. So we've got you till the top of the hour, and in a few minutes we'll come back and discuss this more fully. So please stay with us.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Lori.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. At 7 a.m., I shower. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m. to give Dad his medicine. At 6 a.m., I make his breakfast. At 7 a.m., I shower. I start laundry at 8. At 10, we go for a walk. Every day, I wake up at 5 a.m.
For those dealing with the daily struggles of caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community with experts and other caregivers for advice, tips, and support. Together, let's help each other better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound, and no one could change my mind, but Mama tried.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee. I'm your host, Rob Hathaway. Our number here is 718-305-7176. Our switchboard's on exactly lit up. We'd love to hear from you, and you could take a moment to give us a call, ask questions of our guest, Lori Cardoza Moore. First of all, we're going to remind our listeners that the left can't stand the Second Amendment and Americans' right to keep and bear arms. And now there's something else they're sure to hate. It's the Second Amendment Forum on conservativenationmedia.com with Maxwell Winchester Roberts. We welcome Max and his decades of firearms and Second Amendment rights experience to Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central. The leftist administration in D.C. wants to disarm the American people, and Max just won't let that happen. The Second Amendment Forum, Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com. Where America always wins. I'm going to welcome back to our discussion Lori Cardoza Moore, founder and president of PJTN. And Lori, thank you for being with us and for giving us quite an education on the goings-on in that troubled part of the world we call the Middle East. Let's talk about your organization for a few minutes, if you don't mind.
Absolutely. Well, Rob, our organization's mission is to educate Christians about their biblical responsibility to stand with Israel and the Jewish people. One of the things that we haven't been taught in Christianity is our connectedness to the Jewish people and to the nation of Israel. And there's so many scriptures that talk about it, and so our goal is to produce award-winning media to speak to that specific audience, because I do believe, Rob, we're living in the last days, undoubtedly.
Yes.
We look at the chaos going on in the Middle East. We look at the really chaos that's going on around the world. There's no real leader. We have terrorists. You know, how crazy it is that we're going to give arms to terrorists in Syria, and we're going to disarm Americans. You know, and so So what we're trying to do is try to educate Christians to realize what time are we living in, and can we stand alone and not stand with Israel and with the Jewish people? We see a rise of anti-Semitism happening around the world. And if you look at what's happening in the Middle East, the anti-Semitism that we saw in Nazi Germany is slightly different than the anti-Semitism that we see today. And today's anti-Semitism is not just anti-Jewish, now it's anti-Israel, it's anti-Zionist as well. But its goal is the same.
You know, it sounds, even though I just can't get over the idea of an administration categorizing an act of terrorism as workplace violence. That is so absurd. It drives me up the wall that a person who would scream the name of his deity while pulling the trigger and taking 13 lives, those of his subordinates, and not say that is very allied and akin and to terrorism that's happening around the world. It's maddening. It's crazy.
But, well, Rob, that's the same terrorism that the Jews have been having to fight in the Middle East since the nation of Israel was reborn.
Yes,
9/11 was a wake-up call for all of us, and we all can probably remember where we were on 9/11. And that event is what just impacted me, because after years of studying the Bible, when we were hit on 9/11, I realized that the same enemy that Israel has been fighting through the centuries, because this is not new. What we're witnessing in our lifetime is not new, Rob.
Here, no, new to us, but not new in history.
Yeah, absolutely. The Israelites have been fighting the enemy for the land for thousands of years. This is not new. And unfortunately, we don't look at things from a historical perspective. We have short memories. And unfortunately, even within Christendom, when Christians come to faith, we don't teach them the history of our connection to Israel, to the Jewish people. And so, you know, Christians, by and large, they look at what's happening in Israel and in the Middle East, and they don't see it as something that they have to be involved in. But the Bible is very clear. Genesis 12:3, God said, "I will bless those who bless you, Abraham, and I'll curse those who curse you. And all the nations of the world will be blessed through you." Well, look at us today. Look at
how
the nation of Israel is blessing the world in science, in technology, in medicine. It's unbelievable the impact that they have. Most people don't even realize the Pentium chip in their computers, the cell phones that they use, that they take for granted every day, some of the huge medical advances we've made in medicine come from Jews, from Israel, from the technology, from the science. And we don't recognize it. And unfortunately, we look at what's happening in the Middle East and we say, that's Israel's problem. We're fighting, here in the United States, we are fighting the long war and the short war. The long war is in the land. Israel is on the front line of the battle. They are the canary in the coal mine. And if we, as Americans, do not send up support, the front line of the battle to Israel to fight the battle in the neighborhoods we're living in, we are not going to be able to defend our land in our neighborhood, Rob. And I don't, that's the one thing that grieves me about the church, is that we don't understand that we are connected to Israel. And if we allow Israel, in fact, there's a great scripture in the book of Obadiah where God tells the prophet Obadiah in the latter days he's going to wipe out the descendants of Edom because they stood by while their brother Jacob was held in captivity and they did nothing. And I say to Christian groups all the time, if we stand by like we stood by during the pogroms and the Inquisition and the Holocaust, we stand by today, then there is no hope for this country.
And in the words of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, evil Our silence in the face of evil is evil itself. Not to act is to act. And so, yes, Lori, we need to muster support everywhere we can shout it from the rooftops and proclaim exactly what your organization does. And in the few minutes we have left, Lori, you've got a website. It's www.djtn.org. What can folks in a quick minute find out at your website?
Well, they can order some of the films that are there. There is information about some of the initiatives that we're involved in. There's ways to support what we're doing. We're getting ready to launch a campaign, a media campaign across the state of Tennessee to educate parents about the anti-Semitic, anti-Israel bias, anti-capitalism, pro-Marxism, pro-Islamism, pro-communism in our children's textbooks. That's our biggest thing right now that we're working on. There is a petition on the website. I would encourage your listeners to go and sign, Rob.
Sure.
And, of course, sign up to get our newsletters and get involved. Stay informed, because education is the key. If we are not educated, we are not going to be able, we're not going to recognize the enemy, and we're not going to be able to take a stand. So we are a community organizer amongst the church. It's time to wake the church up, Rob.
Amen and hallelujah. And Lori, thank you for bringing your passion for our Jewish brethren in Israel, for our own country, for the values that we hold dear, and just for being a leader in this fight and in this movement. And I thank you for joining us, and I'll see you and talk to you in the very near future, I'm sure, Lori.
Absolutely. Rob, thank you so much for what you're doing, for giving me this opportunity and continuing to get the word out.
You're welcome anytime, and many blessings to you, too. Good night, Lori.
Good night. Good night.
Well, I imagine after all that discussion about the trouble spots in the world, and even in our own country, you're feeling rather uplifted, and you want to go out and just celebrate. You know, one thing we have to remember, folks, we're Americans. We have had worse times. They appear to be bad. They don't look good, but they have been worse. We haven't lived them. I don't remember. I was around in World War II, but my parents were, and I heard things about what was going on in America, economically, socially. We were united. We were a one people, and we've got to get that spirit back. One of the ways you can help is by participating in this event on Wednesday, September 11th, at the MSC Suites in Cool Springs, where there's going to be a 9/11 commemorative event with Eric Stackelbeck, who will be the speaker, featured guest. The name of his book is, or the event is, The Brotherhood, America's Next Big Enemy. And he's got a book he wrote about that topic. It's at the MSC's Nashville, Cool Springs. Go to Tennessee Freedom Coalition or Act for America or Eventbrite to get your tickets. Sign up and show up. Be informed. Be on guard. Be vigilant. Let's not our country go down the road, as many others have, for not paying attention and being involved. We the people must be engaged. Thank you for listening. I look forward to talking to you again if I'm afforded the opportunity. Good night to everyone, and God bless you all.